Welcome to the 7 Series with Greg Davidson, where we tap the biblical number of perfection in creative ways to explore faith, science, and culture.
For those who have paid attention to the intro of each episode, you will recall that we are tapping the biblical number of perfection in creative ways to explore faith, science, and culture. Well, up to this point, we've spent time and episodes considering questions of faith with biblical understanding or biblical interpretation of passages out of Genesis and other passages related to origins. And we moved into scientific questions, also still kind of looking at questions of origins. And I ended the last episode with a little bit of a teaser saying that we're going to start to move into some cultural subjects, initially still tied to science, where I would share a little bit about what it's been like for me to navigate the cultural spaces of a secular professional organization. Well, that's today's episode. And my motivation for this particular episode is twofold. One is because I know that there's often a perception, perhaps even unconscious, among Christians when they hear a scientist presenting what they know about nature to the church and asking them to take it seriously and maybe even reconsider some verses in that light, that there's a thought that this is just a one-way street, right? It's always just science asking the church to address some scientific observations and that the challenge never goes the other way. Well, I'm going to share a little bit about what it's been like for me to move in the other direction, where I'm not just bringing science to the church, I am sometimes having to confront issues within my secular organization that are motivated by my faith. Second motivation is to actually just give you a little bit of insight into a story, something that recently happened to me, and kind of give you an insider's glimpse of what it has been like for me to be a Christian within a secular organization that is not always what they say. The prompt for this particular story was a decision that was made by the Geological Society of America, that's my primary professional organization, for the first time in their history, to no longer accept job postings from religious universities that had a statement of faith as a requirement for employment. So this was not a universal refusal to accept job postings from any religious school, just from those that take their faith seriously, where they actually expect their staff and faculty to share that same worldview. Now, this was a development from a working group within GSA, short for Geological Society of America. There was an outgrowth of their 2021 GSA Diversity Working Group report that included recommendations to focus on structural change and holding the GSA community accountable for DEI objectives. Now, there was nothing explicit in that report about no longer accepting job postings from religious universities, but the leadership felt like that was a decision that was consistent with the mandate of that report. Now, as you can imagine, many of us felt like that was not only ill-advised, but even very hypocritical. And I didn't just like yank my membership. I actually contacted the leadership, a number of them, and sent them all an email that was expressing my concern and my disappointment and some of the reasons behind that. So I got some interesting responses, like one that said, those schools get to make their rules and we get to make ours, deal with it. To which I did not respond very well. I reacted by basically saying, if that's the attitude, I can't be part of an organization that engages in such blatant bigotry against religious belief. Please withdraw my 28-year membership. Now, the president at the time reached out after that request and said, hey, I understand if you feel like you need to do that, but if you would like to have a conversation, I'm open to discussing. So I put everything on pause and had that conversation. Ended up being an hour-long Zoom meeting that was very professional, and he gave me the opportunity to express my concerns and to have a conversation. I did not change his mind, but he did suggest that rather than just withdrawing my membership, that I look for ways of being part of the conversation. Didn't know exactly what that might look like at the time, but decided to pause the request to withdraw the membership and see where I might be able to have a voice. Well, the first opportunity I saw was the announcement for the next annual conference, which is an event where thousands of geosciences from around the country and even around the world all convene in the same city for 5 days, where there are dozens of venues or dozens of different themes with talks going on all at the same time. And I noticed that one of those sessions was on GSA and public policy. So I thought that might be a good opportunity to share some of these things. But I didn't just submit an abstract, which is how you apply for one of these sessions. I actually contacted the organizer of that session and kind of pitched the idea and said, is this something that you would be amenable to? And at first he was kind of hesitant, but as we discussed it, he eventually came back and said, this sounds like exactly the kinds of things that we should be talking about in a session like this. So I submitted the abstract and it was accepted. So what I'm going to do in this episode is walk through what I was able to present to the people that attended that particular session. The title of the session was called The Law of Unintended Consequences When Well-Intended DEI Initiatives Reduce Diversity and Inclusion. I told them I was going to give them three logical reasons for policy reversal and four practical reasons for policy reversal. And you may notice that that was 3 + 4 = 7. That just seems to be a thing with me. So before I started to explain those reasons, I knew that most of those people didn't know who I was, so it was important to give them a little bit of that background. You know, who is this guy, and does he even really care about things like diversity? So introducing who I am to them, told them a little bit about my background with my research, which included things like stable isotope compositions and measurement of carbon in soil CO2, which I know just sounds so intriguing to everybody listening that they immediately want to go and find what papers I've written on that. Contact me and I can send you those. But I mentioned that to this audience in just letting them know that some of my work had been considered pivotal in those fields, and if they had not, or if they were doing that kind of work and had not referenced me, they might want to step up their lit review. That got a little bit of a chuckle. And shared examples from more recent work, looking at overpumping in some of our aquifers in the U.S., which is causing concern about the long-term resilience of our groundwater supply and the role that I've played in some of that research. From there, I reminded them of the role that I've played in communicating good science to the Christian community, including books that I've written, such as Friend of Science, Friend of Faith, more recently, The Manifold Beauty of Genesis 1, and a full-color hardback book called The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth, that was actually a collaborative effort with 10 other authors. And I showed them or reminded them that some glowing endorsements for that book had come from well-respected members of GSA, including even one past president. Now, regarding the value of diversity, I gave them four quotes, which I'll share with you all. But the first quote is actually repeated in many different articles that you'll find on diversity. The one that I found this in was from an article called The Importance of Diversity and the Challenge of Groupthink, where the writer that's being quoted said, "It is hardly possible to overstate the value of placing human beings in contact with persons dissimilar to themselves and with modes of thought and action unlike those which they are familiar. Such communication has always been, and is particularly in the present age, one of the primary sources of progress." Now, for those who may have their hackles up a little bit, thinking that I'm just buying into the whole modern DEI movement here, you might be interested to know that this quote comes from 1848 by John Stuart Mill, who was both an admirer and also a critic of the Great American Experiment. But I wanted to draw listeners' attention to the importance that was placed on modes of thought and action. From there, I went to more recent quotes. The first is from an article called The Value of Diversity in Organizations by Phillips, Kim Jun, and Shim from 2011, where they say, "Research has shown that when group members have different opinions as to how to perform a task, groups that have social category differences may actually outperform those that have no social category differences." The second comes from an article called The Impact of Workplace Diversity by Elizabeth Foma in 2014, where she said, "Because people all have a unique way of learning, thinking, and processing, it is more likely that a group composed of different minds may have several solutions to a problem. Teams like this have a tendency to see things in different angles and are able to catch any errors that may be presented." So I shared these two quotes to draw attention that the diversity that was being referred to included different opinions and different minds. I then shared a final quote that comes directly from the GSA Diversity Working Group report, where they say, "Diversity of experience, point of view, identity, and talent enhance GSA's ability to advance geoscience research and discovery, service to society, stewardship of the earth, and the geoscience profession." From there, I also drew attention to the fact that their own statement points to diversity of point of view. Given all of that, I tried to make an argument that this new policy, refusing to post job ads from schools requiring an affirmation of religious belief to work at those institutions, was actually antithetical to GSA's own diversity working group report. So I said I was going to give them three logical reasons and four practical reasons. So the first of the logical reasons. So reason number one was that the policy was moving towards homogenization by exclusion. And I said, just let that sink in for a minute, that in the name of increasing diversity and inclusion, decisions are being made that work towards greater homogeneity through systematic exclusion. In one sense, what other reason do we need to overturn this policy? Reason number two was that the policy reduces a minority group of GSA members to second-class citizens. To make this argument, I went back to the working group report to quote two additional sections. First one says, "GSA envisions a bright future in which diverse identities and perspectives are embraced as integral to excellence. In this future, GSA leaders, staff, members, and the geoscience profession reflect the demographics of society, and all GSA members are supported in reaching their full potential." And a little bit later, "GSA will provide practical guidance and engagement opportunities that foster a sense of belonging in GSA for all identity groups." From here, I was able to share the results of many conversations that I had with other GSA members with religious affiliation who felt like the opposite of this was being achieved, that demographic was not being embraced or reflected by GSA, that they did not feel supported, and they did not feel any sense of belonging, even to the point where many of them were simply letting their membership expire. They weren't doing what I did initially and asking for it to actually be withdrawn. They were just deciding that there was no place for them in this organization, and so they were letting their membership expire, reducing them to second-class citizens. Third logical reason for overturning the policy was that globally, religious diversity is increasingly recognized as a value, not a threat. For this, I quoted an article from the Harvard Business Review, not exactly a bastion of religious sentiment, from an article titled, "Where Religious Identity Fits into Your DEI Strategy." And a quote from that paper says that it is time for companies, because the focus was more on industry, to get religion. Even as diversity work has become pervasive in corporate cultures, religious identity is too often left out. And they even make reference to a Religious Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Index, where you can see how well your organization is doing on that score. And I made the observation that GSA would get a failing score. From here, I moved on to the practical reasons. So I'd said there would be four. Number one is that the policy negatively impacts employment options for non-religious members. Now, that may not seem obvious at first, so let me explain. Jobs that are taken by GSA members at faith-based institutions diminish the number of applicants for jobs elsewhere. If fewer jobs are visible that are posted by GSA, that increases the competition for those jobs, and so it's actually harming the non-religious members of GSA. Second reason, the policy actually adds fuel and money to anti-science organizations. Now, many of the Young Earth organizations have long been a thorn in the flesh to institutions or organizations like the Geological Society of America. And so I made the case that by establishing a policy like this, you are actually giving fuel to those organizations where they can now point to something like this and say, see, we told you. They are not just promoting science. Their real objective is to get rid of God and get rid of religious belief from culture. And the money starts to flow. The third practical reason is related to the second one, that it undermines science literacy in America. Now, for this, I drew attention to an article that I had written together with Carol Hill and Ken Wolgamuth, who are also Christian geologists, that we published in the GSA organization's official magazine, a journal called GSA Today, where the title of the article was "The Need for a Paradigm Shift in Science Advocacy," where we made the case that the perpetuation of the warfare model between science and religion effectively vaccinates religious believers against even considering scientific information or scientific evidence. Now, that probably also takes a little bit of explanation. Many scientists just think that, oh, if we create easily understood materials that are appealing to the eye and simple to understand, that people will accept it. And they don't realize that it doesn't matter how good the materials they're producing are, if they are presented to the religious community with a sense of, here, replace your religious belief with this, right? Doesn't matter how good that material is. Those people aren't even going to waste their time looking at it. So when a scientific organization like GSA has this very public declaration that they're not going to allow jobs to be posted on their site from religious institutions, it's effectively communicating a message of, you know, we want to replace religion with science, or that there's this warfare model between them. And they might as well not bother trying to address the public because that public is not going to pay any attention to them. The fourth and final reason was that the policy works against ethnic and racial diversity. Now, this is really interesting because it has long been recognized that among all of the sciences, the geosciences are at the absolute bottom with respect to minority participation or membership. In the general population, roughly 19% are self-identified as Hispanic or Latino, and about 13% as African American or Black. Within GSA membership, only 4.1% are Hispanic and 1.4% Black. GSA's own publications note that that number has not really changed in the last decade. And if you go to other sources, like an article in Nature Geoscience by Bernard and Cooperduck, they say there's been no progress in the last 40 years. Now, very pertinent to this conversation is a survey done by the Pew Research Center. Back in 2014, they did a survey called the Religious Landscape Study, where they surveyed 35,000 people on questions that included, do you believe in God, and how important is religion in your life? So on the first one, that belief in God, they had categories of certain, fairly certain, uncertain, agnostic, atheist, or other. I'm not sure what other might be. But not surprisingly, that among those who self-identified as Asian, belief in God as certain or fairly certain was the lowest at 67%. The white population was higher at 81%. Latino or Hispanic, a little bit higher at 85%. And among the Black population, that number is 94%. If we then move to the importance of religion, where categories were very to somewhat or not very, not at all, or just don't know, that among Asians, that very to somewhat important was about 66%. Among whites, 75%. Hispanics, Latinos, up to 84%. And among the Black community, that number is at 91%. So now consider the message of GSA, that they would like to increase their diversity with getting more African-American, more Hispanic membership. But by this policy, what they're basically saying is that we want you, but you know that thing that like is part of your very identity? Just please leave that at the door. I told those listening, this policy unintentionally is preserving whiteness. And yes, there were a few gasps from the audience. Now, remarkably, there was very little pushback to that. There's just one person. It was an old white guy, ironically, who apparently was one of the individuals who drafted that working group report that wanted to express his outrage and indignation. But from everybody else that was there, including in conversations afterward, they were remarkably pleasant professional conversations where even the session organizer said that, you know, he just never really thought about some of those things before and hoped that the conversation would continue. Now, as of the date of this episode, the policy of GSA has not changed, but at the very least, they cannot say these concerns haven't been publicly raised. We will wrap up today's episode there. And I hope you'll join us next time when I will be bringing on a guest again, this time to have a conversation about immigration from a biblical perspective in ways that's likely to be a bit different than what you may have heard elsewhere. See you there.